You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Strolling through any of the city's fragrant, colorful farmers markets can be enough to make you fantasize about giving up the grind of city life and getting back to the land. Kurt Timmermeister actually did just that. He left Seattle and the restaurant business after he bought a ramshackle 4-acre spread that he eventually transformed into a working farm with dairy cows as well as hogs and chickens and bees and a lot of other stuff. He was on our show in July to discuss his book, Growing a Farmer, in which he describes the ups and downs of learning to farm. Listeners told us how much they enjoyed our conversation, so we thought we would re-air it today as we start this long holiday weekend. I began by noting that he had started with a bakery cafe, not a place that would even suggest thinking about farming. And I asked Kurt Timmermeister, what happened?
I really didn't even occur to me that I should grow my own food. I was very much ensconced in the restaurant business, and trucks would pull up and deliver vegetables, and I was perfectly happy with it.
You say that espresso was a big part of your profits.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, you in Seattle. This is post-Starbucks, I think.
Well, one thing that I tend to remember occasionally is that Howard Schultz and I basically started a coffee shop on the same, like, week. He took a different path than I did. He's done a little bit better with it. But it was 1985, 86 when it would just started to explode.
And you say that a truck just pulled up. So did you have any experience with small farmers or artisanal
none whatsoever.
Food makers?
No. Until I moved to Vashon Island. I still commuted. I still ran the restaurant while I started, you know, developing this piece of land. And it was actually lambs that made me turn the corner. I had rather mistakenly ended up with some lambs, and I somehow slaughtered them, somehow put them on a spit and roasted them, and it was that kind of aha moment. I completely changed the way I thought about food. It was tremendous.
Just because it was your own?
I think because it was well raised, even though I was not particularly good at it. By accident, it was well raised. They were very fresh. They were well slaughtered, and they were inherently beautiful. They were really good.
People talk about how lamb tastes different in France, for example, because they're also eating all of that wonderful stuff up by the side of the road. Is that it? Is it what you feed them?
I think I fed them well. I mean, they had nice grass.
If they eat lavender in France, somehow you almost taste the lavender in the lamb.
I would say you almost taste the lavender. I think you want to taste the lavender more than anything, and you can convince yourself damn well. I think they were well-raised and they were young, and it was, you know, they have an inherent greatness to them if they are, you know, ruined.
So here you are. You are just you're a restaurateur, and your restaurant is doing a little better, and you decide that you want to move out of town.
Right.
And you have enough money to buy a home. What kind of place were you looking for?
I actually would have preferred to live in Seattle. Seattle was, even then, over 20 years ago, rather expensive. So Vashon Island, where I live, was much cheaper. It's kind of catching up. But it was mostly a financial decision.
How was the property that eventually became the farm described in the real estate listings?
They maybe have exaggerated a bit. I mean, they described it as, you know, 4 acres. It had a greenhouse. It had a swimming pool. It had a historic home on it, 2 homes. And I couldn't believe it. And it was the cheapest house available. And then I got there, and it was kind of like Great Gardens or something. It was completely falling apart. The swimming pool was destroyed. The greenhouses were industrial greenhouses that were covered in blackberries. The historic house was nearly rotted away. And this little shack that was the actual house that I was buying, which was a shack.
So were banks happy to give you money
to
buy this place?
It was before Easy Credit even. And their vision was that I was going to tear it down and just I was buying the land. So they wouldn't give me a note for it at all. So I had to basically go to a money lender to get it.
And you say most of the garbage on the land was agricultural garbage.
It was.
What did you find?
It was part of a larger spread of a greenhouse company that had raised mostly orchids at the end. Lots and lots and lots of plastic, oil drums. I mean, test tubes. They had a lab where they were growing orchids and so on. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of of test tubes and plastic racks and bags of orchid bark and so on. Nothing interesting and fascinating from 1890. It was 1960s and 70s.
Well,
garbage.
4 acres isn't vast, but it's large enough. Right. How long did it take you to clean the whole thing up?
Now I have 13 acres and I'm still cleaning up. 22 years later, there are still trucks leaving occasionally.
How did your family react when you had them out for Christmas dinner?
I think they had a realistic, response to it. I think my response was one very much in a fantasy world of like, I thought it was gorgeous. I thought it was a beautiful, beautiful place. And this shack was just so tremendously charming. And it probably wasn't. And they didn't hide that particularly well, but they're happy with it now.
And your first thought was just to live there and fix up the house,
right,
and keep running the restaurant.
Yeah, absolutely.
When did you start to think about farming it?
It was the lamb moment. Someone gave me a couple of sheep. They didn't want them.
People just give you sheep?
Oh, yeah. I got one yesterday, an email at least once every couple of weeks or every month saying I bought 10 chickens and lo and behold, I have a rooster and I know you want it. So how about if I come by tomorrow and drop it off? And I still get those. Lambs, sheep.
These are surplus lambs and roosters.
Surplus sheep. These were old sheep. And they actually somehow had been bred. And so that's how I ended up with the lambs. But somebody thought it was a cute idea and then got rid of them. So I was the benefactor of that.
And how long after all of this did you decide to give up the restaurant business and become a farmer?
It took I commuted and did both for 14 years, which was exhausting.
Okay. How far into this did you buy your first tractor? That's a major commitment, isn't it?
Probably 6-8 years into it, I bought the tractor. And partly because I needed one. And partly because I thought it was really neat. And it would make me look like a farmer. And it wasn't particularly successful at that, but eventually it was.
Well, you were a city boy playing at farmer.
Right. Absolutely.
When you became serious, you even went to look at a 100-acre farm that was for sale a little more than a half hour away from Seattle. Right. Why was that farmer selling it?
It had been an old dairy farm, and this was probably, mid-late 90s, and there were dairies were going broke. They're still going broke, but most of them are gone now in near Seattle. And he was also in his 90s, and he had just sold off the last of the cows a couple of years earlier, and I thought it was a beautiful, beautiful place, and it had a legacy, and it could have easily been a dairy. A week later, I could have put a cow on there; it would have been great.
And he offered you a fantastic deal in terms of financing it.
It was a great deal. Yeah, he was 95, and he wanted to carry a 30-year note, which I still just find amusing and fabulous.
So you didn't buy it.
I did not buy it. Culturally, it wasn't my part of town at all. And Vashon Island, where I live, is a fairly unique place. It has maybe 12,000 people living on it. It's a ferry ride to downtown Seattle, maybe 45 minutes or an hour to get in, unless there's traffic and busy boats. But it's probably one of the most liberal communities in the United States. It's insanely liberal. It is. The lowest incidence of vaccinations in the nation, which is not necessarily a badge of honor, but it tells you how far left the people are there. The zip code of Vashon Island has the largest concentration of gay couples in the state of Washington. And it's a beautiful place to live and completely different than the area where the dairy farm was.
That would be a very conservative part.
Maybe redneck. Yeah. Yeah.
How does that happen, do you think? Because they're both very close to Seattle, which also has a reputation for being a fairly liberal city.
Right. I'm not sure. I think Vashon got lost in time. I mean, it's hard to get to the boat. It's just inconvenient. And so the people who wanted to be there were special.
So you began farming vegetables, which is the natural thing to do.
That's what most people start with.
And were you thinking of supplying yourself at the restaurant?
I would supply some over the years. I would grow just tomatoes one year, or just salad or something, and I'd take it to the restaurant. And the cooks weren't particularly happy with it. I mean, they wanted things in a case box. They wanted them all to be the same size, all look the same. And I would bring in boxes and boxes of apples, and they'd be bruised up, and they were not amused by it all. They wanted Granny Smiths that are exactly the same. It was easier for them.
Which is what some people now say is causing so much trouble in agriculture, because we all want the prettiest instead of thinking about what's the best.
Right.
Were you thinking organic also?
I was thinking, and I still think of organic in the sense of without chemicals added and so on. I've never been certified organic. I don't have much interest in it. But I like to have my own code of ethics of high quality and good stewardship.
Well, how much can you grow on 4 acres? Can you grow enough to actually make a living at a farmer's market?
I make a living today. I don't actually sell at farmer's markets. I make cheese is what I do. I have probably of the 13 acres, probably close to 10 of it is in pasture. There's 12 dairy cows on it, Jersey cows, and we make a fair amount of cheese at that, and it's super tasty.
My guest is Kurt Timmermeister. His book, Growing a Farmer, How I Learned to Live Off the Land. It's published by Norton. So you never went to the farmer's markets?
I did for a while.
I would think that Seattle, where everybody, there are a lot of people like you, Kurt, out there with little farms.
Absolutely. The farmer's market are kind of the golden child of the food movement, and yet I didn't really love them. I sold vegetables for 2 years at a farmer's market, and I haven't since.
But you're also giving away a lot of what you grew to family members, people who'd invested.
Oh, absolutely.
You were giving the best stuff to them, so... if you want to make a lot of money, don't you sell the best stuff?
I part of it was sold through a CSA, through kind of by contract for the year, and then the other half of the produce was sold weekly at the farmer's market. And it was a conflict between those two, who would get the best.
And were you subsidizing the farm with profits from the restaurant?
Oh, absolutely. for many years. Mm-hmm.
So this was an expensive hobby.
It was a very expensive hobby. The IRS agrees that it's a hobby, I think, at that point. I have incredible respect for anyone who can start a small vegetable farm and succeed. It's phenomenally difficult to do.
And then you also started raising bees.
I've had bees for probably 20 years.
Another hobby?
Absolutely, yeah. The cheese is the best business, and it supports the whole farm for me to have side hobbies such as beekeeping.
What kind of cheese?
It's called Dinah's cheese. I actually have some in my bag for you in the green room. It's a bloomy rind cheese made with Jersey cow milk, pasteurized. It's like a Camembert cheese, very gooey inside, beautiful white fluffy mold on the outside.
So then you had to get cows.
I did. It actually came the other way around. Actually, I got cows and then had to think of something to do with the milk. And if I had thought about that I was going to make cheese, I may have organized it a bit better.
But it's interesting. You started with sheep and you call sheep gateway animals.
They're very easy. I mean, if you can have a fence, you can kind of have sheep. I mean, they're really resilient. They'll eat just about anything in there. Not quite as much as goats, but they'll eat whatever grass you put before them.
Are they easier to live with than goats?
Tremendously. I don't have goats today. Mm-hmm.
But they seem to be lovable animals.
The sheep?
Mm-hmm.
There's something about them that's very humble, and they're not bright in the least, so they're just always kind of sweet.
Well, getting back to the bees for a moment, we've done a number of shows about the bees dying off in huge numbers. Is it a problem where you are as well?
I don't think that would be a tremendous problem. People I know that raise bees, that's not really the problem. Moisture in the winter is probably a bigger problem if they're dying off, or varroa mites, that kind of thing.
But you didn't get any honey the first year. You
I
managed
did not.
To keep the bees alive through
right.
the spring and the summer.
Thankfully, I had perseverance through the second season, and then I started getting honey. And in the same way of the lambs, it's you have some failure or challenges, or you don't really know what you're doing, and then you get 2, 3, 4, 5 gallons of the most tremendous honey, and it's all forgotten.
And then you also have to learn all the techniques. You had to learn how to use that smoker to protect yourself against being stung.
Right. Which I would say is one of the challenges of the whole thing. I'm quite good at making smoke now, but at the time it was a little
So you got stung a lot?
I've rarely been stung. I'm not sure why. I don't have any particular fear of bees, and occasionally I've had them go after me, and that's That can be a bit frightening. But
you are
general,
taking their honey from them.
As long as they don't really realize it or comprehend what's going on at the time. But generally, you can calm them and take care of them well.
And then you say that when you bought the cow, right, the first cow, Diana, that's when you realized that you were a farmer and it was no longer a hobby?
A cow has some weight to it. I mean, especially a dairy cow. They're milked twice a day. They're milked immediately after they come off the truck. And it's not a casual, you know, I'm going to go to Hawaii for 2 weeks anymore. You're there and you're there every single day and you have to be at work at 7 in the morning and get it done.
Did you milk this first cow you called Dinah by hand?
First 2.5-3 months were by hand. And it was phenomenally difficult, physically difficult. She had very small teats. She didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't really know what I was doing. It was winter. It was very rainy. It was very muddy. And thankfully, we both lived through it. And then I found an electric milking machine, which changed.
And then you got more cows.
Right.
How many do you have now?
There's 12 presently, and we'll probably have 8 we'll calve in the next 7 months.
You say that the acquisition of your first cow gave you some insight into the dairy business. What were they?
I was a bit naive on that, and hopefully I've learned my lesson. I thought that if I called up an existing dairy and was very nice to them, that they would sell me a lovely cow. And it seemed reasonable, and they were nice. And then I would get there, and they would say, oh, this is, you know, Bessie. And, you know, I hate to give her up, but I think this is the perfect cow for you. And then you get home, and you realize that of the 200 cows this dairy has, this was number 200. There's a reason he was getting rid of it. He doesn't want Bessie anymore. Bessie's not a good cow.
Well, cows stop giving milk at a certain point, don't they?
Eventually. I mean, there's a kind of a commercial viability of a cow, and then there's like a physical viability of the cow. And a dairy could possibly be getting rid of a cow because they just think it's too old for them and not economically viable, but I could still use it. But more likely they start having mastitis and there's something distinctly wrong with the cow.
So how do you – I'm sure now you have a pretty good idea of what makes for a good cow.
Yes.
What are the criteria they're trying to pawn off the worst cow they have?
I've actually switched the way I would buy a cow. Mostly each of the cows are bred annually. To keep them in milk and freshen. So for the most part, I produce my own cows. That's the best part. And then if I have to buy another cow, I will buy a Springer, which is a cow that has never calved. So a 2-year-old and much more expensive, but it's my way of knowing that dairy has never milked that cow.
And you seem to like cows better than sheep, even though you said sheep are lovable.
Cows are a little higher on the intelligence scale, and they have this bulk and with this bulk and milking them twice daily, you get a connection to them for sure and get a sense of personality.
You initially sold raw milk. Was that legal in Washington at the time?
It is legal in the state of Washington, has been for a number of years. I, however, did not have a license for the first few months. Probably one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made.
Not getting the license.
The kind of the culture of people who were selling raw milk was that if you ever called up the Department of Agriculture, they would immediately come in with a SWAT team and arrest you because they wouldn't want anyone to have a raw milk license. It was completely false, and it took me 6 months to realize it. And they've actually were quite helpful, and they were great. And I have a grade A license now for cheese, but I don't sell raw milk any longer.
Well, is raw milk dangerous? It does taste better. I've had raw milk.
It tastes really good. It is,
and you could make more money selling it, can't you?
Much more. It is potentially dangerous. It is not necessarily inherently dangerous, but it is potentially dangerous. It's complicated. I was always in the middle. I've never been really passionate about selling raw milk because I think it'll make everybody healthy, and I've never been very passionate about saying we shouldn't have it and it should be illegal. I think it tastes really, really good. I would still sell it to adults today, for sure. I think if you're healthy and you're adult, I think it's perfectly reasonable to drink it. Unfortunately, most of the customers that I had were buying it for children. And that's when it got much more complicated and hard to swallow.
Don't many dairy farmers, I don't know whether this is the case out there, but right, in the Hudson River Valley, They work in co-ops. They share cows. They share milk.
For traditional or raw milk?
Well, no, I'm just talking about regular milk now.
Almost all of it. Same as West Coast. Yeah.
So you now you're buddies with the other dairy farmers?
So I'm not a part of that culture at all. I have 12 cows. A small commercial dairy would be 50, and very, very few of those. Even 100 cow dairy is very rare anymore. They're going up to, you know, 1,000, 3,000, 5,000 kind of numbers. And they sell bulk, and culturally we don't cross at all.
And your cows can graze, whereas their cows are often just shoved into little spaces.
I think most of those still get some grass, depending on the ones in like Southern California and in the desert and stuff. No, but up where I am, conceivably they could still be on grass a lot.
So you make cheese,
yes,
and that means there's stuff left over. What do you do with that?
We have a lot of whey left over. We have a lot of manure left over as well. A fair amount of the whey goes to hogs. I always keep 3, 4, 5, 6 hogs a year for the whey. And for anything left over, occasionally we'll make a cheese that they're too salty or something's wrong. So they'll eat up those cheeses. But they like the whey especially. And cheese production makes a tremendous quantity of whey that has to be disposed of.
Can you also make butter from this milk? Or is it all of the butter fat being used in the creation of the cheese?
I will often pull out some of the cream. We'll use a cream separator. We'll skim it off and then churn it into butter. It is probably the best thing that comes off the farm. It is, however, raw butter. It's not legal in the state of Washington at all. So it's for anyone who comes to dinner at the farm gets this fabulous golden butter.
I'm not sure I understand. You have to pasteurize the milk for butter as well?
In the state of Washington, you can have a grade A license for raw milk or raw cream, but not for raw butter. That's illegal. So you couldn't. If I had the equipment to pasteurize cream, I would still have I would have to produce tremendous volume to make it worthwhile.
Are you growing vegetables anymore?
I still grow vegetables. Love to. Without the pressure of selling them, it's much more fun, for sure.
Kurt Tibbermeister, his book, Growing a Farmer, How I Learned to Live Off the Land. It's published by Norton. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Leonard. My pleasure.